Man, today's a great day. Maddie Sawyers is going to be baptized later today, and we are pumped about that and just excited as can be. You know, it's a great privilege to go to church here and the Sawyers family and all the jillion kids they have. Not that many, I know. Not that many. One or two of them seem like more. But there, it's great, and to watch them grow up, and it's awesome. We've been already so blessed by Maddie with us, and she's such a courageous girl. Even though sometimes her mom, when I start talking about good things about Maddie, I'll see her mom kind of, you know, raise her eyebrows a little bit, like, "Oh, really? Yeah, well, it's not the whole story, Bob." But it's a great day. Great day to be here. We're kind of slowly transitioning out of the Born Again series, but it kind of is this week and next week, Easter. And then after that, we're still born again. Amen. And that's been a good thing. And as we come and learn about it and talk about all the implications it has for our lives, but being born, sort of has a implication to it that goes beyond the birth, and that is that we're going to grow up. And so today we're going to talk about being fully trained. So Jesus is with his disciples, and he's talking to them, and he says to them that the student is not above the teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like their teacher. And I think of some like Karate Kid or something like that. You know, somebody who's being trained by someone and you're modeling your whatever you're being trained in after them. Dad would always say, you know, about surgery, you watch one, you do one, and then you teach one. And this is how you come to learn it. You watch, you get to where you can do it, and then you teach someone else. And so this idea about being fully trained, you're not fully trained until you're like your teacher. And this is where, though, we're headed. We're being trained. We're being trained by God. We're being trained by God, and his goal for us is that we would be like Jesus. So some of you are more like Jesus than others. I don't know if you've noticed among us that, you know, some. Well, I know in my own life, sometimes I'm a little more like Jesus than I am yesterday or maybe might be tomorrow. But it's a process. And what I'm saying is it's a process for all of us that we're on. We have a road, we're traveling, and God's goal, our goal is that when we're fully trained, we're going to be just like Jesus. Life is a journey. We're on this journey, but it has a destination. And we talked about heaven last week, which was, again, I'm pumped about this destination of heaven, but I'm also pumped about this destination of that I'm going to be just like Jesus. That's where I'm headed. We talked about being born again out of 1 Peter a couple weeks ago. And then this verse comes right after that. After we're born again, we're like newborn babies, and we crave spiritual milk so that we can grow up in our salvation. And the idea here is that we're going to grow. You know, we're not just going to, we're baptized and stay the same. You know, Maddie's going to be baptized today. Awesome. But she's not done, right? We're going to keep on growing. And one of the things we need to grow is spiritual food. And so we get fed in many different ways, our spiritual food. And another way we grow, James says, is through trials, through tribulations, through hard times. There's lots of different ways that we grow as Christians, as followers of Jesus. And so one of the things we're going to do today is we're going to have a couple of people tell parts of their story, not their whole story, but part of their story about their growth. And Joe is going to come talk first, yeah, and then right after Joe exits, Danny, you'll come follow him. And then after Danny, Cindy, you'll come. So come on up and let's all listen to these guys.
Hello, everyone. I wanted to share, Bob asked me to share something in my spiritual growth. And what came to mind was I did not understand God's love for me and us until I became a father myself. I have twin girls, Georgie, you know. I have another one named Carly. She does not attend this church. She attends another church. But when they were younger, probably about three or four, I walked into, we were renting a duplex at the time. And I walked into a room and Carly was on the floor coloring away on the wall. You know, and it's like, oh no, first I'm thinking deposit and you've got to clean that. And I just kind of watched her. She was lost in her, you know, coloring just in her own little world. And I said, Carly, what are you doing? And she turned and looked and that eyes, you know, like a deer in headlights. She knew right then something she wasn't supposed to be doing. You know, and I was a little angry and she got up and, you know, I said, go to your room. She went to her room. You know, I had to clean the wall, scrub it. I actually had to eventually paint over it to get rid of all traces. But, you know, she was, you know, felt guilty and I guess, you know, the feelings of, you know, she's disappointed, mad herself. I don't know. You know, she's three or four. I was angry at first, but I got over it. Thing is, I still love her. Always have, always will. I forgive her and, you know, I'm not going to hold that grudge, but like I say, it just kind of settled in for me that the idea that I make mistakes, I get lost in my own little things. And, you know, then that little voice says, Joe, what are you doing? I understand. I'm God talking to me and me realizing that, you know, I messed up, but he still loves me. He forgives me. And, you know, so that's it. Just a little bit.
As I think about times of spiritual growth, I at first in my mind I was thinking, what do I say? And I was thinking about times where there's been times when I've done what I felt like God wanted me to do, and I've done it kicking and screaming, and sometimes thinking this isn't even gonna amount to anything, God. And so there's been some great times with that, but one in particular that I wanted to share. I know they always have a little bit that needs to change in other people, but change in me. And there was a time I recall there was a fellow that had done me wrong. And I knew from the Bible, he was a Christian, and I knew from the Bible I was supposed to go to him and talk to him about it. And I knew the passage also said, if he won't listen, you take a couple of witnesses, and if he won't listen, then you go to the church. And I recall that I wasn't singing at the time, but I had a terrible attitude. And my attitude was, I can't wait to get to the last step with this guy. I said, I'm going to go talk to him, but I know it won't do any good. And it's going to take some real serious stuff for this guy to ever change. Terrible attitude. And so I went to talk to him, and to my great surprise, he said, you're right. Almost immediately. And he repented. And I was thinking, wow, God. I'm thinking how you needed me to straighten this fella out. And I'm thinking that you could have straightened this guy out any way you wanted to without me. But what you really needed was to straighten me out. And you said to yourself, I have the perfect opportunity for this arrogant guy. That's what's going to happen. And I have trouble following directions. I'll give one more example. This is early in our marriage. I was getting angry with Cindy all the time. She just didn't stand a chance. It seemed like I get angry at her at the drop of a hat. And I saw it was a problem, and I was just praying to God all the time, God, what can I do? This is terrible. Because I could see what she was doing didn't deserve what I was throwing on her. And I just kept praying, and some things seemed to change. And then I remember this one time I got madder, and it was like I'd gone several days in my mind. I don't know. I was like an Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew how many days it had been since I'd blown up. And I blew up at her. And I was just, in doing it, I was kind of devastated. And I just sat there and I was talking to God saying, what are you going to do with me? And I told Cindy I was sorry, and I didn't know what was going to happen. And she said, you know, you have changed. It's not the same as it's always been. And I thought that is the one thing that I needed to hear. I needed God, that God knew I needed to hear that something was different and that he was making a difference and not to give up. And so anyway, I guess my greatest moments were times when God made me know that there was things that needed to be changed in me, and he was the one who could do it.
So last Sunday, Bob asked Danny and I before church to think about whether we would do this for him, about something that we'd learned. And then he asked afterwards, and I said, well, you know, I can think of ways that God's spoken to me, of ways that he's worked powerfully in my life, things that he's done amazing that I've seen. But did I learn anything? You know, and I really had to think about that. And I could remember a time when I was going through great trial, and I just went to God and said, okay, whatever it is, I'm sure I've learned it. No idea what it is, but I'm sure I've learned it by now. Take this away from me. But really, I didn't. I went ahead and said yes. But really, it was a great exercise to go back through things in your life and look for all the ways that God has things that God's taught you. And I really encourage you to do it. And I would love to hear them at communion as a communion thought if you would go through that exercise, because I think it's really powerful. So my lesson that I chose comes from around 1999. Danny chose to leave ministry and to start a career in technology. And so that was a huge change. And so I needed to go back to work. After being home for 8 years with the boys, I was going to go back to work. And I went back to what I had done prior to that, and that was teaching first grade at Johns Elementary. The first year, I cried every day for at least 3 or 4 months, every day. I hated it. I left all my friends at home. You know, that were still at home with their kids. It was just a really, really tough time, and I didn't like it. I finally made it through it, and I got to the end of the year, and I thought, okay, I can do this. And in August, those little five-year-olds walked in, and I said, oh, my goodness, what have I done? I did it again. And all through that year, I pursued other avenues. What am I going to do after this year? I mean, I wouldn't quit in the middle of the year, but I was going to do something else. In fact, I went so far to say that I'd be doing anything but teaching next year. I would not be teaching. I'm not coming back. I told God that. I told the principal that. I told anybody that wanted to hear it, I wouldn't do that. I know some of you are laughing because you know I retired 6 months ago from teaching, right? We got a new principal that year, and she came in March, and I told her that. She introduced herself. I told her that I wasn't coming back. I had all these doors open. I was pursuing counseling couples that were going through infertility. I thought that'd be a great thing to do. I had these other doors open. So I met her in March, and then between March and May, God not only shut those doors, he slammed those doors shut. I mean, just boom, everything was shut. So in May, I had no choice. She came to me with an offer to teach fifth grade as team teacher, teaching math and science with a lady named Tina Moore. And I had no choice. I took it. And I was a little bitter and angry about that, about having to do that. I thought this other way was a much more worthy cause and could really use my skills. In fact, somewhere, and I really, Tina was a beautiful Christian lady. She was a great teacher. We ended up being really good friends. And there was one day she said, I'll never forget it. She said, you know, I prayed so hard that God would send me somebody like you to be my partner, that God would bring someone to be my other half. And I, you know what I answered? I said, well, your prayers must have been more important than mine. I was a little bit bitter, okay? And so then as the year went on, that was early on. And as the year went on, things changed. I found my passion. I found my passion for teaching. I found my passion for kids again. It was just a turnaround year as far as that. And so I went on to obviously teach for a long time. I began coaching teachers to reach their potential. I counseled kids and teachers, coworkers. I led Bible studies. I worked with parents. I mean, I have some of my parents that are good friends today because of the relationships we built. And so through all of that, I learned that God truly knows better what I need than what I do. God knows best, and to trust Him in that. And if I hadn't learned it through all of that, November of 2019, I didn't get it right then because it was so out of the blue. I got a messenger message, and I don't think I saw it until April of the next year. I mean, that's how out of the blue it was. It wasn't something I was expecting. But I got this, and Danny encouraged me to read it all to you, so I'm going to do that if I can get through it. It says, Dear Mrs. Corbett, I want you to understand, as much as I wish it were, this letter is not addressed to every teacher I have ever had. This letter is addressed to you, the teacher who stood out in front of them all, the teacher who inspired me to be my best all the time, the teacher who did not just expect to receive respect, but also gave it in return, the teacher who changed the way I think about education. Firstly, I want to thank you for your patience and perseverance. I know your job has probably had more downs than ups, but if you would not have stuck through it, I wouldn't have gotten the chance to be your student and gain such fulfillment from all you've taught me. Young people can be hard to deal with, and I truly admire your ability to come to work every day and deal with not only your own problems, but also ours. Thank you for making me feel like I deserve to be heard before you, and unfortunately after you. I have experienced many teachers who just talked at us and expect us to take in everything he or she says. I've had teachers talk down to me, and I've had teachers belittle me. Thank you for understanding that I have something important to say and for letting me say it. Your faith in me has given me faith in myself, and for that I am eternally grateful. Thank you for giving me someone to run to instead of from. Thank you for your open door policy and making me feel like I can talk to you about anything. So many of my teachers have made me feel too intimidated to really connect with them, but you made me feel like I can approach you with any problem, no matter the subject. In a time in my life when judgment and drama were so common, you were always there to listen to me, Bent. Thank you for making class entertaining. Not every student enjoyed the subject, but every student still enjoyed being in your classroom. Your mood was always positive, and it spread throughout the room. Thank you for finding a way to make us laugh, and even when you were teaching about things many of us really didn't care about. For many of us, our experience in your classroom was one of the primary reasons we enjoyed coming to school. Finally, and most importantly, thank you for not just teaching me to pass the test, but teaching me to succeed in life. Not only did you give me the tools I needed to do well in your classroom, but you also gave me many of the tools I needed to do well in college and beyond. You never made us focus on studying for standardized tests because you know that information is not what should stick with us when we leave your classroom. You made me feel like I could succeed, and then you taught me how to succeed. The lessons you have taught me have helped me teach my children. They all know about my favorite teacher, Mrs. Corbett, and her ladybugs. I am writing you this letter because I want you to know how much what you do matters. You have been there for me and other students in a way parents, siblings, and friends could not be, and you have inspired me to become the best version of myself. I can imagine it gets tough having students come in and out of your classroom every year, and it can often feel like you are not making a difference in their lives in just a few short months. So for this reason, above all, I want you to know that you have made a profound impact on my entire life, and I could not be more grateful to have known you Thank you for teaching me. Sincerely, your former student. And to that I say, to God be the glory for taking me on a path that touched lives.
Thank you, guys. I want to just put up the next slide and you think about it. In every way, God, in the three stories we just heard, God is using what happens to you, what you do, your response to Him. He's using, He can use those things to transform you into the image of Christ. That's His goal for you. That's when the training ends, is when you know, hey, and the training's going to keep going all the way till then, till you're just like Christ. And I'm so glad to have, to be members of the same church with Joe and Danny and Cindy, but all of you. And I'm like, what Cindy said, we got to tell more stories of our own, because this we can see in our lives, God at work. As I'm sitting there listening to the beginning of Cindy's story, it just hits me. James 1 says, count it all joy when you face trials of many kinds. And then it talks about what those trials are for. They're going to teach us perseverance, and that perseverance is going to lead us to every good thing we need. But, you know, it ain't always that easy. But I want to tell a story about another guy. And I want to talk about these, what I'm calling marker moments. And Maddie Sawyers is having one today. And all of us, you know, our whole family will in this moment. Not only when your child is baptized, man, that's part of your story as well, not just her story. And but I want to talk about the story of Caleb, you know, Joshua's partner. You know, mostly Caleb is Joshua's partner. And but one of my favorite parts of the whole Bible is the story of Caleb in Joshua chapter 14. This was long after what he did in Numbers 13 and 14 when he went and was one of the spies. But in Joshua is, along with all the other Israelites, they're taking over the land of Canaan. And they go from one place to another place to another place. And they either, the people either run or they drive them out or they kill them. And they're taking over the land. And it comes to this place in chapter 14, verse 6, where it says, now the people of Judah approached Joshua at Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of whatever his name is, said to him, you know what the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, at Kadesh Barnea about you and me? I was 40 years old. And what God told him is, I'm going to give you this land. I'm going to give you this land, Caleb. Well, what's happened at this point, it is 45 years later. Now he's 85 years old. And he says down a few verses later, he says, now then, just as the Lord promised, he's kept me alive for 45 years. So here I am today, 85 years old, but I'm still as strong as I was the day that Moses sent me out. You know, I think that's a little old man arrogance there, you know. And y'all will get that later, right, Art? They'll understand what I'm talking about. You and I are really the only ones in the room that get that old man arrogance. But he said, hey, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to take the land. And it happens to be there's some people that he's going to have to force out. And these people are known as giants. Maybe they were tall like Goliath, but maybe they weren't. But they were known as giant for fighters. But here's how it ends. The story ends. It says, so Joshua blessed him, and Hebron belonged to Caleb because he followed the Lord of Israel wholeheartedly. He followed him wholeheartedly. What God said go, he went. What God said do, he did. And he did it wholeheartedly. Now, he did it back 45 years ago. You know? And God blessed him then, but God wasn't done with him yet. And some of us in the room, we look back at our lives and we see this thing God has done and we wonder, you know, what's happening now though? The story ends, it says, the land had rest from war. This is all what happened every time that someone obeyed God, the land had rest from war. Caleb had this God growth experience when he and the 12 spies went in. And he and Joshua, two of them, stood up against everybody. And even though the other 10 turned almost the whole nation against them, Joshua and Caleb stood firm, man, and they were heroes for that. And so he didn't just get a plaque on the wall. You know, but this is a lot of times we look back at our life and think, well, that's what God did for me then. And now I'm kind of cruising, you know, I'm kind of resting my way out. That's not what God's plan is for us. God's plan is to use the things he's done in your life in the past as a foundation for what he's going to do in your life right now, today. And even though Cindy's out teaching, I want to use her as an example. She just retired from teaching. And she has a brilliant teaching career that we heard, you know, we heard about today, but there's way more. I mean, that was just like a little tip of the iceberg of what Cindy's teaching career has been. But all that is now prepared for God's going to use her now and what's next. You understand what I'm saying? And same with you. And we're all in different places in our lives, but God is going to take what he's done, okay, and he's transforming you so you're more like Jesus now than you were then. He's taking everything, good, bad, ugly, to transform you. And what he wants us to do is just say, yes, like Caleb, just say, hey, I'm still alive. And often I present myself to others, I don't have to do it too much to you because you guys know me, as an old man. Because most of the people I'm around, I'm old. And one day one of them came and said, quit talking about yourself as an old man. I said, well, there's some advantages to being an old man. You get forgiven for some things that young people, but I won't go into that right now. But I will say, yeah, I'm alive. God has plans for me. Today and tomorrow and in the future. I'm not going to kick back in retirement and say, just look and see the plaques that are on my wall. I got plaques on my wall. And those are good. Those are good times. But I'm not done. God's wanting to use all those things as a foundation for who I am and who he wants me to be. So here's how it ends up. When Christ appears, when he comes back, says, we will be like him. That's my goal. That's the journey. That's the destination at the end of my journey. And along the way, we set markers out, altars, Ebenezers. I'll tell a different story about Ebenezers on a different day. But these marker moments, I remember the day I was baptized. It was a marker moment for me. I can remember other days in my life where God affirmed me. I remember days in my life where God convicted me. And these moments aren't meant just to put on, it's a plaque on the wall that I can say, yeah, that was a good boy then. No, those things are to remind us of who God is and what he's done and what he's going to continue to do. Because we are his children. And we have his DNA. We're supposed to look like him, and we're growing more and more and more to be just like that. And these things remind us of where we've come from, and they inspire us to live life today based on what we know our God can do, because he's done it and he'll continue to do it. So let's stand and sing. Then at the end of this, we're going to pray with Maddie and so, but let's sing now.